I want to know about what being run over by a truck and being a sickly boy and then a fat piece of shit who didn't want to have his shirt on or off, how that created somebody who is, because you are that. You are that guy that comes in and bulldozes. Like, you have that energy, but you're not, but you're so generous. You know, I have to imagine you developed this because of those issues you had as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is, I like this. We're digging deep on this pod. And then the goblin lands on my shoulder and starts.
Dude, please, at any moment that you think of it, because I don't want to have to. But yeah. I was thinking, as you were saying that, I was going to have him shit on your mouth or something.
Wow, we're really getting deep in this podcast.
Yeah.
A little earlier.
Ooh, and the Triddle Cup. Am I, are we recording now? You just have to capture it all. You have to capture it all, right? Woo! I chose the hottest day, didn't I? Spacious balcony. You need to utilize this, man. You need a foosball table or something over here?
Scoot-doo. Blabbity-blue. Scoop-dee. Oh, yeah!
Thanks for saying I look buff, man. That was pretty nice of you.
Did you wait to bring that up until I sat down to make sure that it gets on camera?
I wasn't waiting, no. We are filming now. This is...
We are going now. Yeah, this is the strongest I've ever seen you.
Thank you.
Since you started being like a movie star, I've seen you taking working out like as part of your job. And you've looked good.
Thank you for saying that.
But now you look like you're... I could see your chest.
Well, you know what? Thank you. Because I've been doing push-ups. Uh-huh. And that's a big part of it, Rick, as I'm sure you know, because I see those titties popping.
I have been getting comments. I'm very grateful for my goblins and boppers.
Yeah.
They're very nice to me.
Sure.
But I've been getting some comments that are like jokes that you're not even allowed to tell on stage because they're so hacky and disrespectful to sick people. About how skinny and frail and I look, and like what's wrong with me, and it sucks, man.
I think you look okay.
I got little arms. I feel
maybe. Are you
the
a
ugliest.
Little skinnier than normal?
Yeah. Let me show you what I used to
See,
look like.
I don't. Yeah.
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 This is what it is now.
Yeah, I get that.
I first got friends because through basketball, and that's where my confidence came from. I started working out, and I always identified as a. I was never a big guy, but I was always in shape.
Yeah.
And
I was the opposite. I was definitely a small guy and also weighed like 80 pounds. And after I was hit by a cement truck as a kid, as I won't shut up about.
I actually wanted to talk to you a little bit about it, but
no,
you talk about it too much?
That's as much as we're talking about it.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. I don't care. And but after the accident, I lost all my weight. So I legitimately weighed like 45, 50 pounds coming out of the hospital
when
I was 11. So I was just like gaunt.
So you were run over by a cement truck.
Uh-huh.
Both legs?
You should have had like funny like screeching noises and horns.
Well, we actually have a clip.
Okay. Hey, Shane, is it safe to cross the street? Yeah, come on. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. No, what did I do? And we're back. So, like I was saying, I was just tiny. I was gaunt. And then after that, that's when I went the opposite. As soon as I was able to eat again, because I was on so many meds and whatnot, I was a little round mound.
So,
and I gained like 100 pounds. I went from 45 pounds to 145 pounds.
Yeah, but 145 pounds is still not a lot.
Yeah, but to gain 100 pounds right. in a matter of like 6 months is a lot.
What does 45 pounds look like? That's.
I don't have.
Do you have a picture that we could throw up here?
Yeah, I think I do. I can get you one.
That's like, I mean, that's sickly.
Yeah. I don't think we have any of my shirt off because I was pretty embarrassed by how tiny I was. But, I just wore like giant Bugs Bunny t-shirts, but
I know that you're very connected to the Children's Hospital still.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason, right?
Yeah.
Was
no,
it?
No, I'm just a creep. Nah, I just love sick kids.
We'll cut to a clip. Yeah. I don't know if I want to animate you just fucking with sick kids or whatever. And when I have people, I have two types of podcasts, I feel like.
Okay.
Like, my podcast falls into two genres, really. Interview and conversation. And within it, some are silly, some are serious, blah, blah, blah. But there's been a few people that I've had on, you being one of them, where if I didn't know you, I would want to do an interview. Because sure. I have, and I still will. I mean, I have so many questions. But also, you have done interviews. You do interviews. That's not what our relationship is. And I think I'm speaking to the audience more than I'm speaking to you right now.
We're conversational.
But I want to ask you some things that feel interviewee.
Oh, well, we'll see how it goes.
Right after a word from Marshall Rugg Gallery.
If you're looking for just the right flooring, you need choices. And at Marshall Carpet One, you'll certainly find them.
So many snaps, dude.
You'll have to stop me.
I like it.
Okay.
You know, I'm starting a podcast to compete with you, with the Workaholics guys.
Yeah, Blake told me. You guys are doing something for, my last say, where, who it's for?
Sure.
Bill Gates.
Yeah, Bill Gates. We're planting the chips.
You're doing iHeartRadio. Mm-hmm. What's it called?
This is important.
And what's the concept of it?
Everything we talk about is very important.
So you do that because was everyone saying, I don't know if I want to do a podcast. We have nothing important to say. And you said, we'll use that to our advantage.
Basically.
It'll be ironic how what we say doesn't matter.
Basically, we were just, it's pandemic time, and we were just so loud.
I know.
And we were just bored. And iHeart was like, do you guys want to do one? And we're like, okay.
Who'd they reach out to?
Our management.
Say, hey, we want the boys. Mm-hmm. How are you known in the industry? Is it the guys?
The guys, yeah. Which I don't like them assuming our genders. I'd say just the people.
But
the
are humans. They right, though? I mean, just they are not right. That it matters.
They'd be right. I think for the, for the most part, yeah.
Okay. So you guys are doing a podcast, and what, are you all from separate locations?
Yeah.
Calling in?
Zooming.
Have you
and
done
then
one
we
yet?
Have mics. Yeah, we've just did our third, I want to say. And then they're going to start rolling out in the next week or so.
I don't want to pass over your body.
I'm just excited to see what you do. Kick it with a professional caster like yourself. Because this is a setup. Multiple cameras, angling down, lots of high-tech equipment, multiple lights.
The goblins?
They're everywhere. They're great.
I don't know if you're the first, but the first that I could remember that I, probably because maybe you've seen a clip or two, but the amount of time I have to say, no, there's going to be an animated goblin coming at you. Just, and they're like, no, I don't understand. Are you fucking with me? And it's just like, I don't know. I mean, yeah, kind of.
Yeah,
but
maybe there will be. Do you do all that yourself?
Shout out to Tom, who helps me with the animation. No.
Tom, T-O-M or T-H-O-M?
Is there a T-H-O-M?
There is.
I know there's a John with an H, but I didn't think there's a Tom with an H.
There is.
T-O-H-O.
Tom York.
Is that with an H?
Yeah.
We'll be right back after I've assembled a little ragtag team.
Cool.
That helps me out with all these different side projects.
That's how you do it.
And the conversations I have with Tom sometimes, who's in England, just about...
You're an English boy
An
now.
English boy.
Yeah. I like this about you.
You know, maybe we don't do the pee because then you'll have to see the penis and we can't show the penis in the first 30 minutes of the podcast. So, and like the technical conversations we have, it could work if we still need a liquid. So if we do diarrhea instead of shit, we still get the same thing as the pee.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, professional poop conversations. That's what this podcast is. I just got embarrassed. You ever tell somebody a story and just like, you know, they're out about 10 seconds in, but you don't want to stop in the middle of the sentence?
I truly didn't understand what you were talking about.
But you didn't say, I don't understand. You just looked at me like.
Also, it's Transformers war behind me right now. This is out of control.
Tell me if you could connect with this, because you have something that you had something since I met you that I developed. We met doing improv class, UCB improv class.
Like 10 years ago, I think now, right?
Probably more.
Yeah.
I think 2009.
Woo!
We were in an improv class, and at the time, you had just sold Workaholics.
Yep.
But it hadn't come out yet.
No, we had just done the pilot, and we had just got picked up to shoot the first season.
So you're in L.A. taking a class with improv people who want to be actors, with teachers who want to be actors.
Mm-hmm.
You are still new,
mm-hmm.
but you have show confidence. Is that fair to say?
What? Explain show confidence.
You are...
I have the confidence because I got Workaholics.
There's a type of confidence that you have of like the I could tell you my version of it. When if I go in for a commercial audition, I've done this before, confidence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You can handle this.
But people who are in level 2 improv class are new.
Yeah,
they don't
have
that kind of confidence.
I also done a lot of, to be fair, I don't want you to feel like I just like show up at improv class and like I got it all handled, but I've done so much improv before. I went through all of Second City. I went through the Groundlings, and then I was just taking UCB as like a thing to do.
Well, you had all, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you had something that they tell people they have the it factor, you know?
Mm.
And sometimes you see it, sometimes you don't, sometimes it takes a while. I thought you were the funniest person in the world. I've told you this. I don't think you've told me this, Rick.
I remember being in class.
We were being in class, and we were asked to do a scene together, and the scene went well. I mean, whatever, as well as a scene could go, which is perfectly,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, crushed.
And
whose
I remember,
line? Move over, Wayne Brady. I'm Wayne. You're Mockery.
Mockery is one. I only know Wayne and Drew.
Yeah, you're the other one.
Is that the older one or the skinny tall one?
I think they're the older one.
He's funny.
Yeah, he's really funny.
He's funny.
Yeah. Not funny. Not funny.
We had a good scene, and I remember you laughed after, and you said, that was really funny. And I remember thinking, like, oh, good. Like, I wanted you to think I was funny. I remember the conversation. That's where you were working at the improv,
uh-huh.
and I was wanting to do stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me, just got to go every night. You know, the same advice that everyone gives everyone, but for whatever reason, I was able to hear it that time and after that scene or whatever. And after then, I was like, yeah. And that's when I started going that's like, before that, I would do it once a month, and then I started doing it all the time at open mics.
Yeah, that is the thing with stand-up is you can't just do it once a month or once a week. You have to do it like 6 times a week.
Yeah.
Especially at the beginning.
When your stage time is 3-minute sets.
Mm-hmm.
But what made me think of that was, when I was telling you that story and you didn't know what I was saying, I felt myself being embarrassed.
Uh-huh.
And then you get through it and then you acknowledge it and then you're safe. You're fine. It's like, listen, I know I just shit my pants. Here we are. We're on the same page. I didn't have that tool when I first moved out here.
Sure.
I had to develop that when I realized, oh, other people don't know that I'm embarrassed. So I would never be on the same page with people. I had to tell people, this is how I'm feeling. And now they know.
I think people like that about you, Rick. I know I certainly get a kick out of it.
But you're like that. I'm saying you've been like that since I met you.
Sure.
Is that do you know what I'm talking about? Do you remember developing that tool?
I don't remember developing any tool, really. No, I remember always thinking you were super funny. I remember when we were taking that improv class, thinking that you were so funny, but I was like, I don't know. When you told me you were interested in stand-up, I was like, do stand-up. Because I was like, I'm not sure if improv's the right thing for you at that time. I bet you would be a much better improviser now because you have these extra tools in your little toolbox. But at the time, you were so funny, but you would like bulldoze scenes and kind of come in and uh-huh. you're like, you have your idea as to what the scene's going to be. And for sure, I would do that too. That's what any like kind of person who like wants to steer the ship would want to do. And then when you told me you're like, I want to do stand-up, I was like, yeah, you're going to be a very funny stand-up.
Well, if you guys want to go to patreon.com/takeyourshoesoff, at the end of this podcast, Adam and I are going to do an improv scene that you could only watch there.
Oh, so, zip.
Yeah.
And you blew it already. I said zip.
Zap.
And we ended there.
Thank you so much for coming, by the way. And I'm really excited to see your podcast. And everybody, that's Adam Devine. I want to know about what being run over by a truck and being a sickly boy and then a fat piece of shit who didn't want to have his shirt on or off, how that created somebody who is Because you are that. You are that guy that comes in and bulldozes. Like, you have that energy, but you're not, but you're so generous. Like, you do that big thing, but you leave space. And that's the same thing I was talking about that I had to develop.
Sure.
I'm kind of leading you into something as ambiguous, but, you know, I have to imagine you developed this because of those issues you had as a kid.
Yeah. I mean, I like this. We're digging deep on this pod. And then the goblin lands on my shoulder and starts.
Dude, please, at any moment that you think of it, because I don't want to have to. But yeah. I was thinking, as you were saying that, I was going to have him shit on your mouth or something.
Wow, we're really getting deep in this podcast.
Yeah. Sucking his dick. And you're going to have just cum on the side of your mouth for the rest of it.
I'm constantly, anytime I say anything a little emotional, I'm salty.
If you ever start crying, just to treat it like somebody stick in your eye.
Ah, okay. Yeah, got a little in my eye there. Thank you, Gobs. I think it was a huge part. I was definitely like that little kid that was just a total maniac and was a ham and wanted attention and that kind of thing. And then after the accident happened, I think I was able to develop those talents in a way that I wasn't able to prior to the accident because I had so much goddamn time on my hands. And then I'm looking at, like, I wanted to be an athlete when I was a kid, as most kids do. I was like, oh, I was good at playing baseball, but I was like a little kid. And I was like, maybe I'll be a professional baseball player. And then after the accident, I'm like, that dream is out the window. I need to find something else. And then I was like, I should do comedy. And like, it's literally, I don't know what I would do. If like, I always think about like, if I had a horrific accident and like my face melted off and I couldn't, people were like, ugh, we don't want to see him act in anything. This is terrifying. The kids are crying. I wouldn't know what to do. I would just have to write all the time. But performing is what I love to do. So
out of all jobs in the world, the one that you could get away with having a melted face the most would be a comedic actor, I would think.
No, you would have to be an accountant. You would have to be in the background. Nobody wants to see you with a melted face off as a lovable comedian. It's scary. It's scary. Yeah. You would have to, the mountain you would have to climb.
I think that with what you, I don't want to get into a huge fight with you right now, but think of all the roles that you could do that were built in for a melted face.
Oh, that's true.
This bit, huge production value, you know, some Guardians of the Galaxy new character. All right. But you said that you now, all right, I'm not going to be in the MLB, so I have time on my hands. And then what, like a montage of you reading Knock Knock jokes? I mean, you don't study comedy. You develop the instincts from the need of it.
For sure, but I watched every movie there was. I love stand-up, so I watched every Evening at the Improv. Like, I was like a psycho about it, and I didn't have anything to do. Like, I couldn't go to school.
For how long?
For like about a year, almost a year.
And you were in a wheelchair for a bit?
And I was in a wheelchair for almost 2 years.
Did you know that you would be walking?
Yeah, my parents didn't. They just lied to me for like a solid like 6 months. Where like, no, you're going to be walking. You will be. And meanwhile, the doctors are like, we don't know if he will.
Your parents tell you this later on?
Yeah, later on. As a kid, I was like, I'm glad they lied to me because it made me, I would have been probably pretty bummed about the whole situation.
What was the rehab like?
Brutal, like really hard. Like relearning how to walk is one of the toughest things that you can do because it's so fucking painful. And like, it's just so demoralizing, like to be a little kid and athletic, like active kid who loved sports and baseball and playing outside. And then being able to just not even like lift your head up without like some help, without your mother having to go, come here.
What do you mean demoralizing? Were you embarrassed?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like you, and even not even fully embarrassed for people like to see you. It's more like I'm embarrassed to myself that I can't do these things that I'm should be doing and that I'm used to doing. You know,
your legs now they're scarred up, but they don't look disfigured. It looks like just your skin had the issue. So could you explain what they look like?
Yeah, you might get it on camera. It looks like uncooked chicken, if you can't really see. Kind of looks like a slab of uncooked chicken meats. All the bones from the knees down were shattered, and they had to, I don't know how they even did it, but some sort of high-tech orthopedic surgeon super glue, and they put it all back
together. H-E-O-S-S-G.
Yeah, exactly. They put it all together, and then the skin was ripped off, which is like the most painful part of the whole situation, honestly. Because broken bones are one thing. Once they set and they heal, it's kind of okay.
But words will never hurt me.
Exactly. Yes, Rick. But the skin was ripped off, so they had to take skin from up here, like a cheese grater.
Are you scarred up there?
Uh-huh. Yeah, a little bit. Not bad, but
right.
See it. And then put it down there. But now I get like weird compliments from like just ripped dudes. Like I get like just jocks. Like at the grocery store or whatever, if I'm out buying some bananas or whatnot, and just some fucking yoked dude. This happened a few weeks ago, and this guy was like, bro. I'm like, what's up, man? Thinking like he's going to be like, low workaholics, tight butthole, man. And he was like, what calf workouts do you do, bro? Because he just thinks I'm shredded.
Oh, so like from afar, maybe it's this vascular.
Yeah, it just looks defined. Like I have 0% body right. fat, but only from the knees down. The rest of my body is that's where I gain it, from the skull to my kneecaps.
Is your right leg worse than your left? Because I can only really see that angle.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see. But it's lower.
Yeah, it's lower.
Oh, fuck, man.
And then I scored this sick tattoo when I was 18, just to really top off the whole shitty leg situation.
Do the bones just... They're shattered, but it looks like a perfect, like if I were drawing you, it's like, great, you nailed the leg. You know, it looks like the coloring, you did something different.
Yeah.
But the leg, it looks exactly like a leg. It doesn't look disfigured. How is that a thing?
Doctors, dude. Doctors, man.
So what happens when you're, for the first 6 months, you're in a wheelchair? Also, let's not talk too much more about this. I'm just really curious because
sure.
We haven't really talked too much of this ever.
Yeah, it's all right. It's only 130 degrees out here.
Are you okay?
No, I'm fine. I'm just.
I have to acknowledge this and thank you. It's a heat wave. So we ended up doing it in the morning instead of the afternoon, but it's still very hot. And I texted you this morning. My intention was I wanted to give you an out.
Sure. And like, no, I saw that. It's fine. I mean, I'm like kind of staying down in Orange County right now, so. I was coming up today anyways, and I only come up every like 2 weeks to like get mail and do stuff around the house. So it's going to be today or then 2 weeks from now, and I don't want to wait two more weeks.
Well, thank you for coming over in this heat.
You're welcome.
So you are a cripple.
I am.
And when you're in a wheelchair, are you for the 6 months, is it multiple surgeries? Are you casted up? Do your legs look deformed?
Yes, they do. They look super deformed.
You could move this mic if you want to lean back.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's too much. I don't know if you're still in focus.
Do I?
No, it's just...
I still look good?
No,
still
come this
look
way.
In shape? Yeah, no, I was pretty deformed. It was up in... They were up in traction. So I had pins through both knees, and they were hanging with, like, little things underneath. Look up what traction is. I don't want to explain what traction is.
Sure.
But full in traction for, like, a month and a half in the hospital, and... And it really, really, really sucked.
What does that do for you now when you go to the Children's Hospital? Because you go and you spend a significant time there, and you do fundraisers, charity for it. What's your connection to these kids? Do you sympathize with them in a way that is different than? I mean, anybody looks at a sick kid and wants them to feel good. But what do you feel anything like? How important these hospitals are? These doctors are?
I mean, yeah, yes, it is weird being so sincere with you right now, and I love it, and that's why I think your podcast is doing well, my man. yeah, no, that's for sure. When I was in the Children's Hospital in Omaha, one of the nurses knew that I was a big baseball fan, and I specifically loved Cal Ripken Jr., because he was the Iron Man. He like never got sick, he never got hurt, he played every game, and he has the record for playing the most games consecutively. Mm-hmm. It's like 3,000 something. And knew that I was a fan, And somehow she had a connection through a friend of a friend of a friend to Kyle Ripka Jr. And he wrote me a letter and signed an baseball and signed an 8x10 and sent it to me. And just having that experience as a kid in a children's hospital, like the Iron Man is reaching out to me and saying that I'm going to be an Iron Man too, really inspired me and like helped me in a way that I didn't know that I needed. And then now as an adult, like just go in there. And even if like I meet 100 kids and like one of them actually was really inspired and helped out by that. Cool. I mean, some of these kids, some of them freak out and are like, oh my God, I watch Pitch Perfect. And then a lot of them are like, I don't know who you are.
Right. So not only do they not know who you are, they only want their doctors or
they're
Cal
like,
Ripkins.
Get out of here. But some of them are pumped.
That's a good transition. I want to go into talking to you for a moment about the new project you're doing with LeBron. So I just saw you post a executive produced by LeBron James docuseries of...
Dude, speaking of being like way too sincere, it's a sure, you're going to explain it, but it's a docuseries where they follow like a handful of 10 celebrities and they, which I guess I'm a celebrity and...
Conan.
Totally. they follow them around and it's sort of like they tell the story of how they became who they are now. And it was so fucking weird, dude, to have like a documentary crew because I'm a comedian. So everything I do is kind of silly and fun. And that's like kind of my whole thing. And to be like, okay, but really take it in. And you're like,
take it in. Give me a more specific example.
So we go to my high school in Omaha, Nebraska, Millard South High School.
Shout out to Millard High School. We'll put their Instagram
handle up. Millard South, go Patriots. And I'm standing on the stage. That was like my theater stage. And they like made me like stand there and go like.
Just for B-roll?
Yeah. So it's a lot of me just like. And they're like, we can tell you're smirking. And I'm like, I'm not. So I just made the point, and I hope they put this in, like, everywhere I went, since they're making me be so sincere, I go, okay, the one thing you have to do for me is you have to put this in of me constantly reaching down to the ground and touching it and just patting it and maybe picking up something and, like...
Like Russell Crowe in Gladiator?
Yeah, totally. And just, like, touching the ground and being like... And then stand up. So I did that wherever we were.
Oh, that would be such a missed opportunity for them not to do that.
I hope they put it in. They for sure won't because they were being very serious about it. But we went to like where I was hit by the cement truck and they were like, okay, take it in. And I'm like, and I'm patting the ground and they're like, wish you wouldn't. And then I go, I'm making a run for it. And then I sprint across the street through traffic and people were like,
Why for the joke?
Yeah, for the joke. Would have been so funny if I was hit by another truck.
Oh, that would have been hysterical.
That would have brought it full circle. Uh-huh. I'm just trying to get more docu-series about my life.
When they approached you, this is a kind of an ambiguous question, so take this for what it is. You have made a couple of jokes about not being a celebrity. I understand the reason. I don't need to explain. I'm sure everyone does. You know, there's a humility to it, but you did it just now when you were Conan, and then you did it when you said even one kid out of 100, if they are a fan of mine, like, you're a celebrity. But you're not an A-list movie star.
Okay. Walked into that one, didn't I?
No, but nah, feel free to, like, I mean... I want you to be honest if you're able to, I mean, on the podcast with me, with you... Mm-hmm. But there is something that might be difficult to accept that you've been doing this long enough, but like you're a celebrity and you with that comes like me going in for a commercial audition. That's my example. Like I got the confidence I could do this. You know what I'm saying?
And you can.
You've done. Thank you. We'll be right back with a word from El Pollo Loco.
Citrus mango?
Mm-hmm.
Fire grilled chicken with fresh mango salsa.
Obviously.
Avocado bacon?
Yeah.
Hand-sliced avocado and crispy bacon. I feel like I don't even know you anymore.
But you've been doing this enough now, and not just long enough, but like, as you've been going, more and more bigger things, where does the novelty wear off? And what I mean by that is, you get asked to, you want to do a podcast? Sure. Some people would freak to have somebody offer them a podcast that they get paid for from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And there's different tiers, being offered a movie, a campaign. But is there something different when it's LeBron James wants to do something? Do you feel like I belong, I deserve, this is interesting? Does that make sense?
Well, for sure, I probably wouldn't have done it if it wasn't LeBron James, just because it's so weird. It honestly was like...
Why is that weird? You have an amazing story.
I know, but it also makes you feel like you're like a dead person. Because they're like going back and telling your story, and you're like, I'm not done with this shit yet.
Is there a superstitious part of it that feels weird?
No, I'm not that superstitious. I mean, I don't think it'll hurt in any way. I gotta go.
Was that just you realizing the mistake you made?
Yeah, wait a second. LeBron. I don't have his number.
Did you guys meet?
No. Honestly, the reason I did it, that I did the becoming thing is because I was like, oh, then for sure LeBron will know who I am.
Well, he will. He'll watch it.
He has to watch it. He
edits them.
He does all the editing. If I know LeBron, when he gets home from playoff basketball, he edits becoming.
You know, why don't we J-cut it here? Because, you know, we want to hear him yell through until he gets to the stage at his school.
And, yeah, let's put the kneeling and patting of the ground back in. That really works for me.
You see him doing it at a game and looks the camera to you?
Thank you, Adam.
So you did it because you thought that you would meet him?
Yeah, just so whether I will meet him or not, which I'm sure I will at some point because I go to enough basketball games and related stuff, but I just want him to go like, from the show that I did. And I'll be like, yeah, from the show you did. Thank you so much. Nice to meet you.
Conan. Yeah.
No, that was me, dude.
I'm sorry.
I'm coming for you, Conan. I'm coming for you, Conan.
I mean, once this show gets, my podcast gets a little bit more, or a budget, just going to have a props department where I'm going to snap and you're going to be in your wrestling outfit with a belt, you know?
I'm coming for you!
So... I want to get into that being you and a basketball fan in the Clippers games that we go to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still interested in, and you wouldn't have done it without LeBron. Now that you have done it, what do you think this is going to come out to be? When I saw you post that, because I love shit like that. I love watching things where we see where people came from.
Yeah, me too. I like it too.
I was just watching one of the chef's tables with, I don't remember her name, but for Milk Bar. Do you ever watch that show?
No.
Do you know Milk Bar?
No.
Oh, it's the cookie place.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it came up
good in cookies.
Great cookies. And just seeing her story of coming up, working at Mama Fuco in New York and then opening her own store, and her parents, they love to bake, but this isn't a profession.
Yeah, they don't get it. Yeah. They're just cookies.
Seinfeld.
We take a little piece of everything.
Richard Lewis. I was kidding. I couldn't think of who else to. We take a little. But I'm crying on the couch. Like, they didn't think that she could make a living with cookies. You know what I mean? So I just love that stuff.
I'll show you, Mom, just covered in flour. burn them again.
You're a big basketball fan.
Yeah. You too.
I'm a different kind of basketball fan than you. I'm a big basketball fan because.
Because you think you should be there?
I think I should have been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a ball is life kind of basketball fan.
That's
where,
true.
Where, like, basketball is what you do.
So many beverages, by the way.
And I'm not sponsored by any of them. I got to figure that out.
Yeah, you got to be sponsored by Ninja Turtles, Starbucks, and also Hollywood, just in general.
You ever feel like your dick is too small and you need a bigger dick?
All the time.
Well, do you ever feel like your nails are too long and you need shorter nails?
No.
Oh. Well, for people that do, there's the Shears 2.0, but if you want a bigger dick... Have you ever thought about trimming your pubic hair?
No, I just let it go. I tie it around my dick.
Well, Manscaped has something to offer.
So being stuck in quarantine has given a lot of us this post-apocalyptic look. And considering that I am one of the hot guys of podcasting, I wanted to show you my routine. And I don't know how to cut my own hair, but there are certain grooming tricks that we can do. And I'm just gonna walk you through what it is. So first of all, my hair is all over the place. Perfect. Support for Take Your Shoes Off podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in below-the-belt men's grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tooling to allow you to make your dick look much bigger. Look how big my dick is! The problem was, sometimes when I trim around my penis, I'd nip my nutsack.
NMN.
That's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team has spent 18 months creating the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created, and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. This is a premium product. It features a ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents. The rechargeable battery lasts up to 90 minutes. Its water-resistant technology allows you to groom in the shower. Its LED light allows you to illuminate your asshole or any other grooming areas for a closer, more precise trim. Removing unwanted pubic hair adds inches onto your meaty cock. And I ask you again, please, just look at how big my penis is. Get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com. Promo code SHOESOFF. That's 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com. Promo code SHOESOFF. You know, before I used this razor, my dick was only this big. And after using Manscaped, now my dick is this big. Oh, shit. Oh, fuck. No. Oh!
That's fun.
But not only Manscaped, I also have Zuki Vitamin C.
Ooh.
You ever notice you take vitamin C and then it goes right through you? You piss orange and you think, I feel no different.
Okay.
See ya.
Yeah.
That's because your vitamin C isn't liposomic vitamin C. You see, yours...
Start again.
A few things are going through my head now. The biggest one being, I don't remember the bullet points of this product, but I do use it.
Yeah.
We actually, my girlfriend reached out to them specifically to sponsor our podcast because we like this product and get it so much that I just wanted them to send me product.
Oh, that's great.
And here was an opportunity for me to, and I go, I don't even remember if it's liposomic, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But you got to check them out.
Yeah, just follow the link or something. I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the description. Yeah. But it is good vitamin C and.
Hey, good.
Sweating.
Good stuff.
So, I love playing basketball. I love connecting with people in basketball. I love getting in fights with basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Your headphones okay? They're starting to hurt?
It's just sweaty.
Okay.
It's okay. I'm fine.
But you have it like money and like basketball.
Money in basketball? What do you mean?
You like basketball and have money.
True.
So when you like basketball, you're not just buying the NBA league pass. You have floor almost. Floor? Are they floor now?
No, they're second row.
Ew. You have second row Clipper seats. And when you ask me to go to one of those games, when somebody asks you to go to a game, it's usually, who are they playing?
Sure.
When you ask to go to a game, it doesn't matter if it's a practice.
It's so fun. I would say, like, I've found a handful of ways to blow some of the money that I've made. And that's the most fun way. To just truly throw money away, because every time you go, it's so fun. Like, I've got to know some of the players. Like,
yeah, you do stuff with the ESPYs.
Yeah.
So you're not just meeting the players. You work with these people now.
Yeah, it's cool. I get invited to like some really cool stuff that when I was a kid, basically everything that I'm doing now is just like, how excited I would be at like 12 years old to tell myself that.
You do a really good job of being the 12-year-old kid who appreciates and wants the stuff that the 12-year-old kid wants. Like, you leverage your work to be able to work with certain types of people. And, like, it's almost like what Kevin Hart kind of does. In a different way, but, like, Kevin Hart wants to be friends with athletes, so he's friends with athletes.
A lot of people are saying I'm exactly like Kevin Hart with the same career trajectory.
Are you a fan of, like, do you know Kevin?
I did, yeah. I did, like, What the Fit, which is like his YouTube.
Did you do one of those? I love that show. Is it out?
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, I'll watch that one. I love that show.
Yeah, we like went to the Centennial High School in Compton, and I joined the marching band.
Oh, I did see a clip of that. I don't remember if I watched it or not. I have to watch the whole. It's a show that Kevin Hart has where he goes with celebrities and they do workout stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what I meant, like the kind of stuff that you do. You like... You want to get in at the ESPYs, and you bring Adam Ray, fan of the podcast, or the podcast a fan. What do you say if like he's been on the podcast multiple times?
The podcast a fan of
fan favorite of the podcast.
Yeah,
and he became friends. He got in the NBA All-Star game.
Yeah,
he knows how to fucking work that game,
dude. We went. I took him. I was presenting at the NBA Awards, and I presented 2 years ago when it was. Coach of the Year, and Dwayne Casey won. And then I brought Adam. We had, like, the craziest night. We went to the after party, and he's like, there's Adam Silver. Meanwhile, we're pretty drunk at this point. Uh-huh. I'm like, I'm not trying to go talk to the commissioner right now. I'm trying
of the NBA.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm trying to play it a little cool, you know? Uh-huh. And Adam just beelines it over to him. And for, like, 20 minutes, I'm, like, talking to whoever else. For 20 minutes, he's just cornering Adam Silver. And I'm like... I have to go save Adam Silver from Adam Ray. And so I go over and I'm like, hey, Adam Silver, nice to meet you. And they were fast friends. They were already exchanging numbers and emails. And I'm like, I got to be more like Adam Ray.
He's great at it.
Yeah.
What were we just talking about? The leveraging, being a kid, making friends, ESPYs. Now you're friends with NBA players.
Some of them, yeah.
And... If I were to find out what those tickets cost, I would think good for you, but that's a way I don't understand it. Going to it one time where you have the special parking, you go into the garage, you walk right in, there's waiters that it's not free food, it's already paid in the ticket. But when I go, order whatever you want.
It seems free when you're there.
It is free for me.
Yeah.
And it's like you don't just invite me to watch a basketball game, you invite me for it's a vacation. And you go to this game and it's just you know, it's one of the most fun things you could do in L.A. is going that close.
I think so, too, especially now that they're so goddamn good. It's awesome because I've been a fan for like damn near 10 years now, and they weren't good when I first started to go to a lot of games. And then it just so happened, like when I started to make money that I could afford good tickets is when they drafted Blake Griffin and Chris Paul joined, and then all of a sudden... The whole trajectory of the Clippers changed.
Blake Griffin, another fan favorite of the podcast.
Yeah.
Is there something you feel about... I used to go to the Cleveland Cavalier games before LeBron, and if I show my college ID...
Rub it in.
If I show my college ID, I get to go down in the lower seats for it was $10. So whatever, because there was whatever seats are left, $10 you get in. And I used to love that because obviously it's $10, I have great seats. And then LeBron came overnight. You can't get seats.
Yeah.
And more than anything, I'm glad he's there and had a great time. But there was this selfish part of me that was like, fuck all you guys. You're not Cavs fans.
Yeah.
You're taking... Is there something that you feel like...
I for sure would have been that way if I didn't start making money at that point. Like if... Because it was just an easy transition from going to a lot of games, paying... I would pay $7 and sit way up top. And then... There was nobody there. So you a lot of times they'd let you just walk down. They're like, all right, it's fine. And you could go down to the lower bowl because they just want to fill the seats. And then I started to make money, and it was just an easy transition to then go like, okay, I'm just going to buy tickets.
I need to take control of this podcast and
please.
Force some specific
please
questions.
Please do. Because we're all over the place, Rick.
Yeah, we're just having stuff that
we're
that...
just talking like friends. This isn't entertaining.
Was that poop?
Hey, that's for you to decide.
People that are coming here that are fans of this podcast, great. People that are coming here because, oh, here's Adam. I want to hear some stuff. I want to ask some career stuff.
Ooh.
You know?
Ooh.
And I want to start with a very generic question that I feel is the best question. I need you to be honest with me. What's it like being a celebrity? I could narrow that down if need be. But like, be honest and don't be humble. like, you went from being run over by a cement truck and being embarrassed about the way he looked and physically behaved to now what I have friends that...
To being the freak athlete you see before you.
I have celebrity friends.
Yeah, I believe you.
Look at the guest list.
Yeah.
It speaks for itself.
That's insane.
I've never been around somebody that gets the fanfare that you do. Going somewhere where how many people surround themselves around you.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I want to give you, as I'm asking you this question and talking over it, the way you are with your fans is, I can't imagine ever getting there, but I have taken note of how kind you are to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Where you probably, I can't imagine you always want to. I've never seen you turn down a picture. You always do a funny joke as you're walking away to let them know, I acknowledge you,
and
we're done
now. Yeah. And we're done now.
Like, it's clinical,
yeah,
the way you do it.
Sure.
So your life is, you walk out, people are all around you.
Sometimes. I mean, it depends on where we're at. And like the age of people.
What's your demographic? Young.
It's changing now because people that were diehard workaholic fans when they were younger are like in their late 20s, early 30s now.
And also the Pitch Perfect was young
and then
aging.
And then Pitch Perfect and the Modern Family. So it's, I think that's why I do get recognized as often as I do, is because I have the younger 20-somethings from Workaholics and Mike and Dave and stuff like that. And then the family crowd with Modern Family and Pitch Perfect on the Pitch Perfect movies.
Forget all the stuff that's annoying about it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know,
it's awesome. I will say, like, for the most part,
could you give some specifics?
It's pretty great. Like, you get free drinks a lot. You get free food a lot.
But not just like the perks of gifts you're getting. I'm talking about like in your perspective of the world.
Oh, I hate it.
Really?
No.
No, but like to when I found out my TV show, I shot a pilot. It got picked up the series. We're waiting for when we get to film it.
I know. I'm excited.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If I were sitting in this apartment doing this podcast every week, not knowing where my next job comes from, I would be scared right now.
For sure.
Having a show that may never film because of the way the world is, still, I'm like, I'm able to be happier and feel better.
You're like,
does that make sense?
I'm on my way.
Yeah.
It is. I still feel like the whole world could just turn and be like, you know what? We don't like him anymore. And then I'm just, you know, I have to sell my house and move back home. Like, I still feel like that. But I do, what I love so much about stand-up comedy is I also always feel like no matter what, I can go on the road and
they can
do
never
the,
take that away
I,
from you.
Yeah, I can always do stand-up, which is so fun. And so it's liberating. Unlike a lot of actor friends of mine that you're like, they're sort of like, they'd be fucked.
I think about that all the time.
Yeah.
How do you even get an agent if you never did stand up?
I don't know how anyone does anything if they aren't creating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like just like a straight up, you have to be so hot. That's it. You have to be so fucking hot. That ain't me, baby.
You did a, my girlfriend wanted me to ask you because we just had Will Smith on the podcast.
You did?
Yeah.
Holy shit, man.
Yes, and I don't know when I'm coming out yet. I was thinking maybe the 100th episode or something. It was a wild story how we got him on. I don't want to talk about it right now, but...
That's cool.
He's my Will Smith. I don't know how to make an analogy different.
Yeah.
He's the king.
Yeah, for sure. Me too.
I don't know this bit, but Betty told me that you have a joke about... I don't know what this is about meeting Will.
Oh, yeah. No, I have a
joke. Story?
It was in my stand-up special on Netflix, Best Time of Our Lives. And I was, I met Will Smith, and essentially, I'm not going to tell the joke here, but essentially, I was like, holy shit, you're Will Smith, man. And he's like, uh-huh. And that's it.
Are you Adam at this point? Like, are you who you are now?
No.
So he didn't know who you were yet.
He had no clue.
You ever think about that? You ever think about, like you said, oh, LeBron will have to see me. Do you ever think about, they probably know who I am.
Oh, no. So sorry. What actually happened was I told him, I got so nervous around Will Smith that I forgot his name. I saw Will Smith. I know it's Will Smith.
Uh-huh.
And I was at some party, and I was like just it was a Hollywood party, and I'm like uncomfortable being there, and I'm like just looking at the snacks. It's just a lot of like hanging around the snack table. And
why are you uncomfortable being there?
Just because there's like big stars there.
Oh, a big and, Hollywood party.
Yeah, and like normally in those situations, you just sort of find the other comedians,
mm-hmm.
and then it's just me and Nick Kroll standing by the fucking charcuterie board, and I saw Will Smith, and I was like, holy shit, Lawrence Fishburne.
Did you said that?
Yeah.
To him?
Yeah.
No. You also, that's such a harder name to remember.
It just is the one that came out, man.
It's another black guy.
Yeah.
And what'd he say?
He was just like, uh-huh. And I'm like...
He didn't even laugh.
No, he was like...
Fuck.
It was like a uncomfortable, like, like thinking that I was being a dick or something.
Right.
Where it's like, oh, this guy's trying to be funny by being an asshole, which people do all the time. And by the way, don't do it.
Yeah,
guys.
You mean like negging somebody to make them feel I'm not afraid of you?
Yeah, like all the time people will come up to me and be like, oh, hey, man, big fan of Blake from Workaholics. And you're like,
it's cute. You know, your friend.
Yeah, all right, okay. Yeah, you're all right, though.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, you're okay in some stuff.
Right.
Yeah, thanks, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
It's better to just be nice.
Do you ever get embarrassed with people like that?
Embarrassed for
them?
Let
me give you an example. No.
Or embarrassed of myself, like
when there's
insecure.
When there's somebody who I'm a fan of,
mm-hmm.
who, perfect example, Blake Griffin, huge fan, obviously, and then we became friends, or I became friends with him, not the other way around necessarily, and I don't want to lose that friendship. I don't want to let him down. You know, like, I don't want him to think,
sure.
Oh, Rick's too much, because everybody else does. I can't have him think it. So sometimes if I text something and, like, he doesn't text back, and then I'll text again, like, if we were doing a podcast and I'll reach out a second time,
yeah.
and he doesn't write back, I think, I'm such a... And I get, like... The only way I could explain this is something that I do not feel often, that I felt all the time in high school, which is I'm such an idiot. I blew it. That like
sure.
feeling that I misunderstood this person that I look up to, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah.
Does that ever happen with you with people, or are you comfortable enough in this in that like?
Yeah. I mean,
does that make sense what I'm saying? If I said that to Will Smith and I thought I bombed in front of Will Smith, I don't know how I'd recover.
Well, there is a thing that just happened fairly recently. I was at the Critics' Choice Awards, and I was presenting at the Critics' Choice Awards. And Robert De Niro comes backstage, and he's like such a big star that there's a ton of stars in the backstage area. And they come through with security and like block out room for him to walk in, Robert De Niro. Meanwhile, like...
Had you worked with him already?
Yeah, and I worked with him on The Intern.
Right.
And he comes in, and I'm like too confident sometimes about shit. And I'm like, Bob, how's it going? He looks at me, does not remember me at all, and just goes... Mm-hmm.
That's actually good Bob eyes that you're doing.
Yeah. And then he walks away. He goes... And then he's like, yeah. Like, obviously doesn't remember uh-huh. me. And then he walks away, and I'm with Chloe, my fiance, and she's like, he didn't remember you at all. And I'm like, I know.
What does that feel like?
And in hindsight, I wish I just would have gone, because I was hanging him out to dry
right.
in a way that I wish I wouldn't have. I was just like, does this motherfucker remember me? And he didn't. I should have gone, Bob, remember me? Adam Devine. We worked on The Intern together, XYZ.
Right.
And then he at least could have pretended.
Right.
And gone like, oh, yeah, you know. But instead, and I look back at that and I go like, what was I, why did I do that? I guess to answer your question, I do have some moments like that. But for the most part, I'm like, you either get what I'm saying or you don't. And that's fine.
I've experienced that, and my defense to it now is when I see somebody, Joel McHale, he was on my podcast already. We did a movie together. We've I mean, we're not, we've talked a significant amount. Mm-hmm. We texted, we follow each other on Instagram, we know each other. I saw him at the farmer's market, and I said, Joel, and he turned around, and before he even had time to go, before he had time to not remember who I am, I go, Rick Glassman from, you know, blah, blah, blah. He goes, I know.
He's like, yeah.
But I would be so scared for them to...
I'm weirdly the opposite, and I don't even like this about myself. I'm the total opposite, where I go, Joel.
Like you're calling him out. You're wearing a mask. Uh-huh.
From before? And then I put it on them, which you should never put it on them. It's much nicer and way more polite to just be like...
That's what I want from people. I want everyone to be wearing a name tag.
Honestly, me too. Because I'm pretty bad at names.
Mm-hmm. And faces for me.
And faces and personalities and whole conversations uh-huh. that we've had.
There was a... I don't want to say who it was. I don't even want to give too many details in case they're listening. Because this is a friend of mine. And he's been dating a girl. They're married. But he, at this time, had been dating her for years. I've met her 5+ times. You know, in I've been to their house. Like, I know who this person is.
Yeah.
And I never seen her out. It's only been at his house. So we're at a show, and I'm talking to her, and I don't recognize her at all, but she's talking to me like we know each other. I don't figure it out until the boyfriend comes around. I make the connection. Great.
How embarrassing is that?
Then...
Did she call you out?
She's no. Like, I played it well. I mean, I'm sweating, but maybe yeah. she just thought like I was hot.
Yeah.
So then 20 minutes later, I'm talking to somebody else, and the same thing is happening, and I don't know who this person is, and then... That same friend comes and comes next to her, where I realize that's the same exact girl that I forgot 20 minutes ago. And it happened again, just in the other room. I was so embarrassed because I'm also having good to see you again conversation that I just yeah. had with her 20 minutes
You're
ago.
She's like, we just...
Yeah, and she was nice or didn't catch on.
That's sweet.
That's why I learned never say nice to meet you. I always say good to see you.
Yeah.
Because it could be either.
Oh, I'm 100%... Like, if I... You know, because you take these meetings... around town, which I'm sure you've taken a bunch of meetings, and you go into these rooms and there's like 8 people sitting there. And for sure, uh-huh. you've met one of them somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So 100% it's good to see you, good to see you, good to see you, good to see you, good to see you. And then it's up to them at the end of the meeting to go, really good to meet you. And then you go, it's great meeting you.
I am so paranoid and insecure that that has happened to me. And they say, nice to meet you. And I will go, yeah, I feel like I feel like we've met before multiple times.
And then they're like, we haven't.
And, yeah. And I go, yeah, I don't know. And then I'm like, yeah, no. And I just force myself into the opposite thing because I think maybe they're testing me to see if we've met. The meeting one is maybe the only time I'm okay with lying.
Sure.
It's just to my core, to my bones, I feel so bad if I've met somebody and I forget them, but well, I always will.
My mother always taught me that it's okay to lie for politeness' sake.
I think I agree that exists, but who are you being polite to? And I think you really have to check in with that because sometimes we lie because we think we don't want to hurt their feelings, but what we're really doing is controlling how they feel about us. And you get yourself into some sticky situations there. Where
yeah, what the fuck, Penny? Why are you teaching me this bullshit, huh?
Does that make sense, what I'm saying? Like, sometimes...
Sure. Yeah, but you also never want to go, like, great to meet you. And then they're like, we've met 10 other times. How do you not remember me? And you're like...
But that's lying.
Sure, but wouldn't it just be much nicer to be like, good to see you again?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying not lying is way better. Are we saying the same thing or different things?
No.
You're saying it's okay to lie to be nice.
Yes.
I'm saying if you were to say to me, if I were to ask you to be in a movie that I wrote and you were to lie and say, dude, thanks so much, but hold on. If I would ask you to be in a movie that I wrote, but you're never going to do that. Just you've read my writing, you don't, whatever the thing may be.
Sure.
And you say, hey, man, I love that you asked. Please ask me again, but I'm just busy this year. Or this month or whatever.
Yeah.
Now I keep asking you.
Sure.
And you have to keep coming up with stuff.
Well, that's what happened with this podcast where I'm like, I don't want to do... Because you, the last time you really asked me, I just got done doing a ton of press for this movie I did. So I had just done so much press and was just like done talking.
I got the vibe of, oh, Adam doesn't want to do it. But also, you never said no. So the past couple I wrote, Adam, by the way, if you don't want to do the podcast, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But until you say no, I'm going to keep asking.
Yes, for sure. Well, I didn't want to say no because I knew I wanted to do it at some point. I just, you know, once you like go through the car wash of
yeah, I understand,
of just constant press every day, doing interviews from the moment you wake up until, you know, for like weeks at a time,
yeah,
it's just exhausting. And you're like done talking, especially about yourself.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't want to talk.
Well, I want to make sure that I'm being clear to you and the people listening. There's zero issue with it. The point I was making is I don't want somebody to be, for me, I don't want them to just be nice to me. I want to know what it is. Let me give another example that's not us. If I ask a girl out and she's not interested, or I go on a date with a girl and she doesn't want, just say, hey, man, it's not for me.
Sure.
I would rather get the information than have my feelings be saved, because you don't grow from that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk about this now because I talk about it on the podcast. I used to a lot, but I came into some self-awareness late in life in mm-hmm. my early 30s. That happened because somebody who I respected and trusted was both, I was old enough to be able to receive it, and he was kind enough to be able to say, here's what people think. And he gave me a direct email about, this is about the story that I've talked about getting kicked out of a basketball game. And like, some of the guys don't like playing with you. In my head, why? Because they're sick of winning? But like, no, they just want to.
Was this intramural basketball?
This is a pickup game with Bill Lawrence.
Okay. Was it Bill that?
Yeah.
I love this.
And these are, you know, 40-year-old comedy writers that just want to have a good time away from their kids.
Yeah.
And I'm driving too hard to the hoop and yelling at people for not shooting a three on a fast break.
Yeah.
Which can happen sometimes, but, you know, rules are meant to be broken. Anyway.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill, for telling me the stuff that these guys who were complaining about me wouldn't tell me. They went to Bill and complained.
Uh-huh.
Had you just said to me, hey, Rick, listen, you know, you have a very quick first step, and I think you're very, very great, or however they want to sugarcoat it, but when I'm guarding you, I can't go home and have to ice every time. I would say, oh, yeah, thanks for telling me. Maybe don't guard me, or when you're guarding me, I'll take it easy.
Uh-huh.
They don't tell me. They go and tell Bill.
Sure.
I don't want to get into it, talk too much about it.
Well, I think, hang on, I think that's a very much you specific thing that you sometimes, and probably now more than you used to, but you have a hard time picking up on those social cues.
Yes.
I feel most other people would have clocked that as they're playing the game and just didn't have to have anyone tell them, and they're able to go like, okay.
You're right.
For the most part.
I do struggle with that, but I think everybody, no matter who they are, could relate on some level of not picking up on these things. And for me, the way I grew up playing basketball, competitive basketball, where it's about winning,
mm-hmm.
and you're literally getting into fights on the court, and then afterwards, hey man, good game or whatever.
Yeah.
When these people are being polite after, maybe they're going like this, hey man, you know, great game. You're fun to be around. And I was just like, thanks, you too. You know, I may have missed it.
I hope that's what it was.
But I wouldn't
You're
have missed it.
You're real fun to be around.
I wouldn't have
thanks.
Missed
it. Thanks.
Are you okay with those headphones? I know sometimes they get hurt after a little bit.
Yeah, it's okay.
I texted you the other day. I want to give a shout out to Magic Camp.
Big shout out to Magic Camp.
Big shout out to Magic Camp. By the way, you've done a lot of stuff I like. I don't want to say Magic Camp is my favorite thing.
Okay.
But it's the most recent thing I watched. And as I said, I've been crying about stuff because of my own issues. My girlfriend texted me, you got to watch Magic Camp. I'm like, yeah, I know. I saw it came out. I'll watch it soon. She's like, just watch it. She loved it. I'm on this couch. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it because I can't tell you. I'm sure this has happened that I just can't remember. But, you know, you watch the stuff your friends are in.
Uh-huh.
Some of the stuff is okay. Some of the stuff is great. Some of the stuff he was good. Some of the stuff he's done better, or she.
Sure.
I don't remember a time that I've watched my friend in something where I'm actually, I'm obsessed with this movie. You know what I mean?
I love that, Rick. Thank you so much.
I'm feeling myself, I'm about to start watering up. I get this way when I'm being, like, saying something emotional to somebody or sincere or whatever. It's okay. I can't control the watery eyes. You were so good. You were so good. Some of the reaction shots that, you know, those tricks and getting the watery eyes or whatever it might be, were so, there were two times it cut to you. One I remember was at the bonfire when the kids talking about the family and then everybody else's. And just it's a very otherwise corny moment where everyone's finally connecting and the bully kid is hugging the not bully kid. And then it cuts to the guy going, you know, but that reaction shot of yours, I made noises crying and I rewound it. It was so good, but that's just one shot. The whole movie, which is a silly kids going to magic camp institution, you know, it's just a very genre-specific Disney kids movie. It was so well directed. And you were so good. I was so in. Anyway, I'm talking way too much about it. But
no,
I
love it. Thank you so much. It was weird because we shot that like 3 years ago, and I think Disney was waiting to... There were some other issues, but there...
Do we not want to talk about them? Can I talk about them?
I think you could talk about them. I don't think I...
Well, you don't even have to confirm if this is true or not.
Okay.
My feeling was Jeffrey Tambor had gotten into some hot water publicly, and they didn't want to release this movie while there's this scandal going on, so they just sat on it for a while. Maybe, maybe not. But
allegedly, that could be true.
The timing was that way.
And then also, I think they wanted to wait to put it on the streaming service, and it was just sort of happening at that time. It was starting to gear up. And so it kind of got lost in the wash for me, where I'm like, I did this thing, I forgot all about it. And then to have it come out like this week, where you're like, whoa, cool. And to see like the overwhelming response of people that really like it. And I think it was like such a heartfelt, cute movie, especially like now when everything's, you know, so weird and what a weird time we're in. I think people really related to it. So it's kind of fun.
I post, you know, you on Instagram, you post stuff you like or your friend's stuff. And I've never gotten as many responses. I posted just my Insta story, Magic Camp, and the conversation I had with Betty about how I was crying during it.
Mm-hmm.
So many people wrote back, not just that they liked it, crying during it. My wife cried at this part. I cried, like, just so many people were into it. What a, you know, respectfully, what an odd, out of all the things you've done, not that that was the best thing you've done, but it was the best reaction I got for the things that you've done. You know, like,
yeah, you weren't crying during Game Over Man.
Yo, are you a fan of Adam Devine? Yeah, dude, I fucking love Magic Camp. You know, but what a specific thing. Another movie of yours I'd love for you to talk on for a bit, and I don't want to keep you too long. I don't even know how long we've been going, but my coffee's kicking in. I'm having a great time with you.
Yeah, doing good.
Isn't It Romantic? Mm-hmm. I remember I went to the theaters with Brent, and I coincidentally maybe have seen a lot of your movies in the theaters together.
Yeah.
We both walked out of that one like, that's fucking a great movie.
Brent loves romantic comedies. I love that about him.
Same.
It's a weird thing. Like, I mean, honestly, this is something I definitely didn't expect. I did not think that, like, first of all, you don't even realize you're going to have a career. And then secondly, when you start to have a career and then it starts to go in a direction that you didn't expect. I think it's awesome, but
what direction do you expect?
I never expected to be like a rom-com guy. And I've done multiple romantic comedies now.
Yeah, that's crazy. From the day I met you. The day I met you, I said to myself, if he makes it, he's a rom-com guy.
He's a rom-com guy.
You so feel like a rom-com guy to me.
Well, I never pictured that for
myself.
What
did you picture? Action movies?
No, I pictured like Sandler or Farley or, you know, silly comedy guy.
Workaholics. Right.
Yeah. And so, I just never saw it going that direction. But, like, I'm so happy doing it now.
Did you audition?
It's super fun.
Did you have to audition? They just offer.
They offered it, yeah.
Do you ever audition anymore?
Yeah. I just... usually, it's, like, a pretty big movie where, like, the director... I just auditioned for something Robert Zemeckis is doing. So, he's not just going to offer me the part.
Do you know yet, or are you able to talk about?
No, I don't know yet. So I'm not going to jinx it.
Do you ever feel, if you're asked to audition, do you ever feel above it? I don't want to put that on you like you're better than. I'm ever saying, like, strategically, where you'll say, I would do this job, but I'm not going to audition. You must offer it to me.
Yeah, I mean, I understand both. Because since I was a producer on a bunch of my stuff, on Workaholics and Game Over Man and stuff that I've written and produced, I understand, like, just wanting to go, like, hey, we like this actor, but we want to make sure they can do this role. We've never seen them do something like this. So if it's something that, like, suddenly I'm going to be playing a villain or something, and they're like, would you mind auditioning? I might do that. But if it's like a thing where, hey, we want you to play you, come audition for this, then maybe I would just go, like, just give it to me.
You could say no if it's you're not allowed to, but I do have footage from your again, we'll take this out or we'll bleep it. But you're the new villain in the new Suicide Squad, and yeah. I have the audition tape. Do you mind if I show a piece of it?
Yeah, roll it.
It's too hot to bleed.
And
it was.
And was that your only line?
Yeah, that was my only line.
And you got it.
They offered it.
Very cool. Congratulations. For those of you who aren't on Patreon to see the behind the scenes, that took probably 4 minutes to explain and put together. So sorry for killing the momentum. They came together. Isn't It Romantic is a Groundhog's Day device of rom-coms where things repeat themselves over and over again.
Yeah.
I also saw another movie that used that device, Palm Springs. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Yeah, I like Palm Springs a lot.
A movie like that, where it's using such a popular device that is so recognizable, in reading the script, I wonder, is there a worry about that? Because the way it came out was completely... It stands on its own. It's very, very good. Mm-hmm. Saw it in theaters, then watched it again when it came on. Like, that's a great movie. Do you know... Like... As somebody who's getting a script, you got an offer, you know there's some, like, fun celebrities in it. I assume you already knew that some people were attached?
At that point, I just knew it was me and Rebel.
Who you've already worked with and you're friends with.
Sure.
So I'm sure you thought this will be a fun time. Is there a worry about choosing the wrong project?
Yeah. I mean, for anything. But you also, you just never know. If you like the script and you think you're going to do a good job... And then it's up to other people to do their job. So you can't help what the director's going to do. You could just sort of talk to them and suss them out. And hopefully they do a great job as well. And the director of photography and the editor, like, everything has to come together in order for a movie to be great. And so you just try to pick the right projects that you're surrounded with people that you kind of already know and trust. And then
right.
Just unleash that caged bird.
I don't know if this question is going to make sense, but I think this when I watch certain movies, that being one of them. There's a tone in that movie that is very specific. It's satirical. It's between a parody and a satire. It's like they're making fun of devices and they're self-aware of it, but it's not looking to camera. And in this universe, it's believable.
Yeah.
You know?
And they built a world where this is what's happening.
Yes. Like in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, no one's saying there's no such thing as cartoons in real life. They just treat it like that's what it is, and they play it that way the whole time.
Yeah.
In that movie, there's two moments. There's in this world, and then there's the bookends.
Mm-hmm.
And almost as if they use different cameras, sure enough, once this world is created, it becomes this tone that is the job of the director to make sure everybody understands... We're going to be silly, we're going to be this thing, but everyone needs to be the same version of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have actors coming in, bringing their own flair, and it's his or her job to make sure... Me interviewing a director, and you were just the actor in it, how do you communicate to the actors, or specifically, how did the director communicate to you that, I want everyone to know what the tone is... Does he show you something? Because everyone was on the same page.
The director is Todd Strauss-Schultz, and he's super talented. I did another movie with him called The Final Girls that is a super fun movie that also kind of plays with... it's basically we get stuck in a horror movie, and so...
I don't know this. Where can I watch it?
It's on Video On Demand. Look it up. It's where I actually met Chloe. So... the whole, I'm like this like classic like 80s jock and who just like wants to like have sex with everybody. Mm-hmm. And so super fun character to play. And met Todd there, and he's like visually like a stunning director and really good with
tone. Are you saying he's a good looking person, or are you saying the cinematography?
Both.
But seriously, what did you mean?
No, I meant like he's really good at creating these shots you've never seen before and having just painting a picture with his photography that other directors would have just had like a locked off frame and with the two characters, and he's doing stuff that you wouldn't mm-hmm. necessarily think to do. And so when I found out that he was doing Isn't It Romantic, I was like, oh, this guy's going to crush it. And I had total confidence, and he did.
But did he ever have to give tonal direction? Because that feels, some movies feel like, oh, this would be good, but this person was so, this is an obscure reference. And but in the Baywatch movie, Rob Hubel was so funny. But that character, do you remember that movie at all?
No, I'm sorry. I watched it once.
I saw in the theaters with Brent, and we both agreed on this. It's almost like he was in a different movie.
Yeah.
Like, the stuff he did worked. And those scenes, it was very funny. But it was so big and so different. Where it's like, you know, everyone wasn't on the same page. And I felt like it missed because of that.
So, well, I would say the only person that didn't change in that movie, that didn't have like dramatic, like suddenly I'm rom-com person, is my character. Because I'm like kind of the best friend character in the beginning. And then all of a sudden it goes into she bonks mm-hmm. her head and she's in rom-com world. I'm still just the best friend character. And then she learns through her arc that I'm the one that she actually loves, and she doesn't need anything more than what's exactly in front of her. And also she needs to learn to love herself.
Right.
But then the other characters, like,
Hemsworth,
like, yeah, Liam, his character is goes from like being like a New York, Brooklyn, engineer contractor guy to like suddenly being like the most debonair Australian man.
What is it like to be, because you're the straight guy.
Uh-huh.
And you're the goofiest guy on set, probably.
So weird, dude. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I did not expect it to go this direction. And I'm also just like, why me, you know?
What do you mean?
About, like, to play the straight man.
Because you feel like you don't deserve it, or you're not good enough, or because you wouldn't want to? I don't understand.
No, I guess I just never saw it for myself. So it's weird anytime people, the reason is because of Modern Family. Modern Family is how I mean, big shout out to Steve Levitan and everybody over at Modern Family for like looking at me and going,
Yeah,
you could be the cute straight guy straight man that falls in love with Sarah Hyland's character.
Are you ever on a project where your job is to be straight guy? But you want to...
Let me tell you something.
Do you ever have to suppress yourself, or do you ever do something and they say, that's not what this is? Do you have that need to try and be funny when that's not your job?
No, I've learned to like pick the spots. Like I like circle a few places in scripts where I'm like, oh, I'm going to let something fly here because it would be appropriate for the scene for me to be a little right out there or whatever. But I remember I was doing so many of these type of roles, and then we shot Game Over Man, and I was like playing it pretty straight. And I remember Anders and Blake were like, okay, cut.
Right.
What are you doing? And I'm like, I'm just... I'm playing the character. And they're like, you're playing a character named Alex with three X's. We need you to be the wild man that the Workaholics fans know and love. And I'm like,
How much would it suck if they were being nice and they said, you're doing a really great job and didn't tell you that you need to have three X's?
Well, sure.
Here's kind of a sub question while we're talking Game Over Man. What did you do to make your dick look the way it did? Because you show your penis in that movie.
I do.
And I don't know what your penis looks like erect,
mm-hmm.
But I know what it looks like soft, and I don't believe that's how big it is soft. And did you give some pulls? You know?
No.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
That it was soft. That was soft. That was a soft penis.
That's the smallest it gets? Or did you
No, it gets soft. It gets smaller. I jerked off a ton right before. In front of all the crew guys.
When people, before they do a shirt off scene, they'll do some push-ups and some curls or whatever. What did you do to prep? Have to have done something.
I did a classic like wake up wiggle.
So it grew a little?
Well, you just don't want it an innie. Because mine goes all the way in, balls and all. Not much. It also was like, we shot that scene for like 6 hours. So I wasn't just slapping my dick around for 6 straight hours. And also, there's a whole crew there of like, thank God we shot that kind of towards the back half of the movie. Like, we'd already been with these people for about a month. So, like, the crew guys were comfortable around me, and it wasn't like day one where everyone's like, I can't believe, are we shooting a porno? Like, at this point.
If it was day one, they'd be like, ooh!
Yuck! But definitely, like, crew guys were, like, kind of weirded out at first, and you're like, sorry, this is just part of the movie.
Whose idea was it for you to be naked?
I think that, I honestly can't remember whose idea it was initially, but we had that idea for the autoerotic asphyxiation scene in Game Over Man. That was like one of the, when we were just brainstorming funny scene ideas. And so we had that idea like 6 years before shooting the actual movie. So that, I knew I was doing that.
So you were always cool being naked.
And then I was, So by the time it was time to do it, I was just like, yep.
No hesitation?
Here we go. No.
Would you be embarrassed being naked in other situations that's not for the art? Or are you somebody that you go into a locker room, you've always been comfortable being naked?
I'm not uncomfortable being naked. I mean, I wouldn't just like whip my dick out on this podcast and be like, you know, it was for that scene and it made sense for the scene and it wasn't just naked for naked sake.
It was 100% naked for naked sake.
But for the scene, it worked.
Oh, well, that's why it worked. It was just, it was so like, it was shocking. It was hysterical.
I love that scene in the movie because, first of all, you've never seen a scene like that in any movie ever. It was so shocking. And also, like, the hard right and left turns that scene takes is, I'm so proud of that scene. Like, even though my dick's out, even, you know, and people are like, oh, his dick's out.
It looks great. You look great in it.
Thank you.
You really do.
Thank you. But I think it's so funny. Like, I think that scene is so goddamn funny.
Yeah, it's a laugh. The theater laughs out loud.
Sure.
Was it even in theaters?
No, it's Netflix. So
Did they do a thing?
We premiered at the Bruin in Westwood.
So you got to watch it in the theater?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was like a huge theater, like 500 seats or something. And they had an entire brass band and a gospel choir sing Shaggy's It Wasn't Me.
Mm-hmm.
But that it's a huge part of the movie where the hijacker hijacks this celebrity party and makes Shaggy sing It Wasn't Me at gunpoint. So he's like sadly singing like, picture this, we were both butt naked banging on the bathroom floor. And they had this entire like brass band and gospel choir singing this, but it's to a crowd that hasn't seen the movie yet, so it made no sense. Mm-hmm. But it was cool that Netflix like put on this big production for us. So it was really fun to see it in the theater that one time. I think it is the type of movie that would have done well in theaters because there's so many of those big moments that people would have left going, holy shit, you got to go see this movie. It's insane.
I love going to theaters when it's I don't love going to packed theaters for my own entertainment, but if I'm seeing something that's big, it's fun to be in a packed theater to hear what people respond to. And when the whole theater laughs out loud at something, or when you hear a whole theater gasp at something, it's just always like, you know, like, I'm not studying it by any means. I mean, everybody notices these things, but there is something where I like, that's a certain type of thing, and those always stand out to me. So sometimes I watch movies and I think how it would go in a theater, and like, that's a big moment.
I know, that's the one thing. I love Netflix, and they've been like super good to me and the Workaholics guys, but you know, I definitely miss, I would have loved to like peek into different theaters as Game Over Man was rolling out.
That's a fun little thing that you see people do. I know Michael B. Jordan in a different way, like snuck into like, you know, Creed or something. You know, it's not a comedy where he gets to go, hey everybody, you know, or whatever, like to connect, but like to show up like Vinny Chase at Aquaman and just kind of like surprise some people.
Yeah.
I don't want to go without mentioning another fan favorite, Kyle Newacek, who directed it.
Yeah.
He came on and we talked a lot about Murder Mystery, but it's cool. I'm not even a question. I just want to, it's cool that like you guys wrote these web videos and now we're doing such different and big things. And just shout out to Kyle and great job with that movie.
Big shout out, Kyle.
And also, you just did Shark Week with Anders, didn't you?
Anders and Blake.
They both did it.
Yeah.
You had them both on Bad Ideas too?
Yep.
I don't know how to, I haven't seen it. I don't even know if Quibi's out. I don't know how that works.
Quibi's out. You can download it.
I just wanted to be honest to make sure I don't get myself in something like, I think it's so great. I've only seen your promos.
Sure.
But I do want to shout it out and talk about that for a second, because that's something you made.
Yeah, super fun. It's basically like, I, you know, as I'm sure you did too, like I grew up like watching like Jackass and Wild Boys and shows like that. And I was like, oh, that seems so fun. And taking a more fun approach as opposed to like me butt chugging milk or something. Mm-hmm. Like it's like things that I've always kind of wanted to do, but probably wouldn't do in my regular life, like racing in a demolition derby or like swimming in the Amazon River.
All things you picked?
Yeah. And we drove a truck on the side of this cliff. It was like 800 feet straight down on this muddy dirt road. This giant ice cream truck. I learned how to drive a stick in the parking lot at the base of the hill and then took the...
How do they make sure you're safe?
They don't. It's a bad idea, Rick. Yeah, yeah! My dick's out again.
Is that the theme song of the show, too?
Yeah, uh-huh. I've seen it.
Dude, I've recently I've been trying to be conscious, and I think I am now, of not going too long. Not for the audience or for me, but you're outside. It gets tiring. This is draining. So I think we got to come to an end.
Okay.
But I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
It's okay. Rick.
I don't see... I don't see many... any friends at the moment.
Yeah.
Because,
this is good. Keep using this.
That's stupid. It doesn't matter. I just appreciate you coming over.
Let the tears fly. Let the tears roll. Move the hand. Let the camera see your face. Very good.
You know what I hate?
Yep.
And it's the editor's fault. It's the actor's fault, but it's the editor's fault for using that take. When I'm watching a cry performance and you see that they're getting there, but then they go like this in an attempt to wash the tear down the face,
yeah.
Out immediately. I'm out immediately. The need that people feel to show a tear going down the face as opposed to showing a face that's having a real feeling, so unprofessional. Speak on that.
Yeah. I do know what you're saying, and I'm sure that I've done that, because I've done a couple things where I've had to cry or get close to crying, and it's not... I've worked with actors that can just do it like that. I just saw it. That was incredible. And that's not a skill that I necessarily have, so it takes everything to get it there, including me just going...
Well, the way they edited it in Magic Camp... There was no tear down the face, and if there was, it would probably be too much. It's perfect. Adam, I feel like I want to end this the way if we were on a Comedy Central roast and I just called you a fat fucking piece of shit turd sandwich for like 4 minutes and did well.
That would have crushed.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I would do it in the way that I do stuff where like I'm stumbling over it and I, you know, people, it would be great. And then I would want to end it by going like this. Well, I would start by saying all jokes aside, which I don't need to do here.
Yeah.
And then I would say...
That's important, though, because you put the jokes aside.
You have to let them know, oh, is he joking or not?
He's not joking anymore.
Here, hey.
They're aside.
Behind the scenes.
Yep.
Here it is. I'm such a huge fan of yours.
Thanks.
And I've been a fan, I mean, literally since the day I met you, but in a different way. That was just, oh, here's a guy I want to be friends with. He's funny. And just what you've been doing. And I don't know if I have a... Yeah, I don't know. I think everyone I've met that I'm a fan of, I was either a fan of them before I met them, or, yeah, that's it. There's nobody that I was friends with. I love Brent. I'm a huge fan of Brent, but, like, differently. You know, I'm not going to the theaters, at least not yet, wanting to see Brent movies.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Someday.
So there's something that, actually, I would have loved to have brought up earlier so I could talk to you about it. Maybe we'll have you back in another time. But, there's an interesting relationship that I'm projecting with you, which is, I don't know if this is the right verbiage, but it's definitely something like this. I want you to like me. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't mean that. I mean that like as an artist, like I think you're, so there's an intimidation that I sometimes feel around you.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
I guess.
That is weird to have with a peer.
Yeah.
Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if I even want to put this in because I'm not going somewhere with it, but
I feel that way about Will Ferrell. Peer.
Yeah, but he's not your peer.
No, we're peers.
He's not. He's a generation above you. He's a king of comedy.
Yeah, I feel
Will Smith knows who Will Ferrell is.
That's true.
But the point I'm making is you are a guest that I've been wanting to have on.
Yeah.
Since when I started the podcast and like a list of some of the guests, including Will Smith, Adam Devine, I'm just really glad that you came over.
Me too.
And there's a part of me, I had Will Forte on recently.
I know, so funny.
Felt this way with Will. Oh, he's one of the funniest people in the world. We didn't do a lot of silly.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's fine. People like the episode a lot. But there's a part of me that feels like, oh man, we didn't play. But there's another part of me that's like, oh, I'm glad Adam saw that. Here's what it is. It's going so long. This will be the Patreon content. I know that in the beginning of our relationship, I was a lot around you.
Sure.
You've told me this.
Yeah. Yes.
And I felt like, oh, fuck, I'm such a fan of his, you know, that I want him to like me.
Uh-huh.
Oh, why? I'm so annoying. You know what I'm saying?
No, but I see the thing is I know what you're thinking, but I always thought you were so funny. Like, and I've told you that before, I think, and that's why we become buddies and that's why we go to basketball games and do stuff, because I do think you're truly very talented and really, really funny.
I appreciate it, but there is something to, what I'm saying is I've been around you the past few years. Is this weird? Everything I'm saying, I'm sorry if it is, we could take this out.
No,
I'm sorry. But I've been around you, like coming to basketball games. I remember one in particular, I love getting high and going to a game like that. I want to get stoned.
Me too.
And I remember there was a game that with you, me, and Eric Griffin that I came to, and I was high, and I was high. And there was a moment where I got like, oh no, because I know Adam thinks I'm too much. And this is such, I'm projecting it. It's me, it's insecurity, yeah, blah, blah, blah.
I think that's right.
It's still real. I'm feeling it.
Sure.
And Adam and I, and Eric and I were just going off on each other, and you texted me after.
Love it.
You told me that, and this is such a corny thing that I'm admitting. I was so relieved, because that was one of those moments, like I told you, where, you know, I text Blake and like, oh, I hope I didn't embarrass myself.
Yeah.
It's happened to me maybe 20 times in the past 10 years, but it's happened. One of them was after that. I'm like, oh fuck, I don't want Adam to. I don't want him to not invite me to these games. These are vacations. I want to go to these. I don't want to blow it. And you texted me, dude, you and Eric together are so funny. And there was this moment of like, oh, she texted me back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like I need to admit that to you or something.
I was, you and Eric together, because also Eric is a lot too. Eric is a lot, and you are also can be a lot, and the but you guys are opposite ends of a lot, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, he's a mean piece of shit, and I'm a goofy guy that's a little loud.
Yes, and when you guys tee off on each other, I just sit back in the cut, and it's some of my favorite things.
Okay. Well, to end this, could you look to camera and like I don't remember what the song was, but one of your Pitch Perfect songs that people love and
sure. Please don't stop the music. Pop 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 pop. Jimmy, it's getting late. Making my way over to my favorite place. I gotta get your body moving. All right, that's it. I was blanking on some of the words there, but
blubbery blue scoop.